Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Anyway, this would be The Media Project.
Whatever.
Whatever. That's Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Kingston in...
No. The Daily... Well, I'm the Daily King.
That's true. The almost retired Daily King. Nearly, yes.
But from the Daily Freeman.
From the Daily Freeman, yes. In Kingston, not the Daily...
After all this time, I know we don't circulate up here, Rex, but come on.
The Daily Kingston.
Yeah, next time I read the Union Times...
I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Actually, I got a job application the other day from a young man who wanted to write for the Union. Mm. In fact, the typing was bad, and so the second reference, it was a lowercase U for Union, so I thought about saying, you know, let me forward this to CSEA and see if you can get a job there. Anyway,
Stephen Medeiros.
It's bad to seek a job at a place where you don't get the name right. We're going to talk today. We often talk here on this show about he said, she said journalism, about journalists failing to take a stand on important issues. We're going to talk today about a place where it has been done right and a place where it has been done wrong. All right?
All right.
Okay. And the wrong part, I think, is the place where we might talk about Neil Ferguson's Newsweek piece on Barack Obama. The right place, I think, would be in the New York Times, which did quite a remarkable analytical piece on the front page in the lead position about the Romney Medicare plan and what it meant. So just to let you know, this is serious. People sometimes say that we have too much fun on this show. So yeah. We're going to be serious. We're not going to have fun here.
Could you just give us a little précis of the Newsweek article?
Thank you.
Some of us who didn't read it would know what you're talking about.
Okay. Actually, the controversy is Neil Ferguson has written a cover story about how awful Barack Obama is, the fact that he should not be reelected. Ferguson is a Brit who's lived in America for a good deal of time. He puts forward the notion that Obama does not deserve to be reelected. What has prompted such an outcry about this is it was pointed out by Paul Krugman in the New York Times, by many other people who have done reviews of this, that there were selective quotes, that he's been basically misstating facts, not just offering his opinion. As Krugman says, you can put forth the argument that Obama doesn't deserve to be reelected. But what is questionable is Newsweek's decision to play this as a huge cover story in light of the fact that there are big misstatements of fact.
Now, isn't Newsweek supposed to be a sort of semi-left in its orientation?
Well, I think there's a general perception of that. Tina Brown now edits it, you know, along with Daily Beast. So it's meant to have this hip flavor to it. I saw an online interview with the executive editor, a young woman, who blithely stated that this was just the right thing for them to do, to put this opinion piece in there. And my concern is that it's not just that it's fine if somebody wants to put forward opinion. It's fine even if Newsweek wants to run an opinion piece on the front page. But as Daniel Patrick Moynihan used to say, people are entitled to their own opinions, but not to their own set of facts. And that is, I think, a valid point of view, that when we are urging sometimes journalists to take a stand, to state what is real and what is not, it is inappropriate for something like Newsweek to put forward a piece with factual errors and to trumpet the piece.
Now, do we know for sure that they were factual errors?
Certainly seems that way. I've read independent analyses. Columbia Journalism Review, for example, did a summary of many of the analyses, pointing out that there were misstatements of what's really in the Affordable Care Act. It's not just a fact-checking problem here. It's misstating what, for example, the Congressional Budget Office says about the so-called Obamacare.
And what do you think, Ira?
I think that having not read this piece, but listening to the way Rex describes it, it just seems to me that this is part of what's going on in this country now and in the many of the media outlets, that people are able to offer their opinion and perhaps be fast and loose with the facts in offering that opinion. And you believe what you choose to believe and not, but it's just part of the fabric of the discussion now. And I think whether it's something as seemingly black and white as this Todd Akin, where we all heard what he said, and then people try to interpret, he didn't mean it that way. I mean, we heard what he said. People are inclined now to make arguments from their point of view and tailor their arguments to that point of view, even if it means saying one and one is three. And that's not defending it. I'm just saying that Newsweek, it sounds to me, what makes it unique in this case is that Newsweek put it on the cover, and what their motivation for that is not clear.
But what do you think the motivation could be? Could it be sort of, as Pete Seeger sings in the wonderful song Before and After, prostitution?
Well, I don't know, but the very first thing that comes to my mind is that they are trying to attract an audience and sell magazines to people who wouldn't ordinarily buy it.
Exactly.
So there may be that.
But, you don't have to be Einstein to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was telling Alan before we went on the air, many people may have read over this weekend the Cal Thomas piece about the Akin case.
Never read them. Don't like them.
And Cal Thomas, noted conservative columnist, his point of view begins that Akin fell into a trap set by the liberal media.
Oh, my God.
The liberal media asked him a question about rape as it concerned abortion, and he walked into the trap and did not answer it the right way. Thomas acknowledges that he made a mistake in how the guy answered the question. But nevertheless, his premise was that this was a trap. This is the atmosphere that we're in, where they're trying to turn around what is such an obviously egregious statement to make it a political statement and make it into something that it wasn't supposed to be.
And then I asked Ira, quite conversationally and in PhD language,
which I didn't understand.
Why do you run that jerk?
Cal Thomas. Well, our newspaper believes in having as much balance among our op-ed columnists as we can find. And he is the most widely syndicated conservative column, maybe the most syndicated columnist in the country now.
I read that
statistic sometime
back.
That's
scary.
Well, it is scary. And he's a commentator on Fox News, so there's that point of view. So I don't object to running the column. He has some gravitas, although when he runs a statement like that, gives me reason for pause.
Well, yeah, the liberal media trapped him into a factual misstatement about how the human anatomy works.
And by the way, it wasn't the liberal media. I don't know who this person was who was doing the interview, but it was one interviewer in the market in Missouri. I don't know if it was a St. Louis station, but it was hardly representative of the entire media that he then castigates as an example.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are despicable individuals who attack the liberal media all the time. I mean, it drives me crazy, frankly, to hear that, because it is the refuge of scoundrels who, when they say something stupid or find themselves questioned about what they actually have done, about the positions they've taken, will then blame the messenger. It's always been thus.
Well, what I was bemoaning before we went on the air was people are, in our society now, people are inclined to believe that criticism or criticism from the other side. I mean, there are people who might criticize Biden or Obama about something, and then that side will say, well, what do you expect? It was the Rush Limbaugh, it was the Tea Party. Well, wait a minute. Maybe Biden said something that was stupid and deserves to be criticized.
Absolutely.
For it. So people put it into a context that's broader than the actual example.
Now, I didn't hear him say it, but I understand that Rush Limbaugh, being a media person and therefore appropriate to discuss on the Media Project, took the sort of Republican Romney side in this and said he should get out. Now, this is very interesting to me because, you know, a lot of these guys are puppets for one political party or another. And he certainly is. And I think that the real story here is how this vignette with this jerk has reflected on the position of these two candidates about women. Now, the party platform, which is always ignored, nobody reads it. It might be in your paper, but nobody reads it. Nobody cares about it. Now they care about it because it does reflect more about what Aiken wants than what the moderates want.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the liberal media, you know, what is the paragon of liberal media, supposedly the New York Times, right? And you can see why conservatives get upset about it, because here was a New York Times story in the lead position on the front page the other day saying patients, here's the headline, patients would pay more if Romney restores Medicare savings, analysts say. So, you know, Mitt Romney has attacked the fact that $716 billion has supposedly been taken away from hospitals and insurers in Medicare by President Obama.
I believe, by the way, just an interjection, that Ryan voted for that.
Ah, yes, right. And Romney has said, I'm going to put that back. This is evidence that Obama is tearing apart Medicare. The Times, in a news story, points out that, in fact, this actually would be money taken away from Medicare. It would hasten the insolvency of Medicare if Romney's formula is followed.
And put the money back.
And put the money back into.
Allegedly put the money.
Because if you put the money back in, it's basically taking money away from Medicare beneficiaries and putting it into the hands of insurance companies and healthcare providers. So it's taking money from the seniors in higher premiums and copays and handing it over to private insurance companies. So I thought that was a great example of truth-telling. I presume it's some penalty to the New York Times because a lot of conservatives will be upset about it.
So what's the penalty?
Well, the penalty is people on the right will lose trust in the New York Times. They'll say the Times is attacking
Romney.
They've
always thought it's Pravda.
Now, this story was in the right-hand front page,
yes,
top corner. So it was the lead story in the New York Times. And was it marked as analysis?
No, it was not. It's a news story saying that, and it quoted a lot of people on the conservative side of the spectrum saying that this is both puzzling and bogus, in fact, on the part of Governor Romney. And while the campaign, as the Times says, adamantly disputes the critics' assertions, the Times was bold enough to say, nevertheless, we're going forward with this story because our reporting has pretty clearly revealed. I mean, it's not even a stretch to do this. It's a very simple, straightforward reporting saying that this would, in fact, damage the Medicare program, what Romney is reporting, purporting to do.
So here's why I think, you know, you're really onto something here, Rex, when you say truth-telling. I think the Times is truth-telling in this case. I think, of course, it is perceived and will be perceived by the Republicans and by the conservatives as being, you know, one-sided. Look, they're going to say the Times is going to endorse Obama. They are. And in my opinion, they should. Nevertheless, I see this the way that it's going is that the Times tells the truth and they're attacked from the other side. And that's part of the deal. And of course, they can go and they can find all of those people who have something to say about it. And so can you, Rex.
Yep.
You write a story and you can, you know, you'll always be able to find people who will substantiate your side. If you really wanted to, you could go out and probably find people who are wrong and do the other side.
But here's my question. I believe that the New York Times did and would write this kind of a story 40 years ago. But would the New York Times have run it on the front page 40 years ago? And if the answer to that is no, what does it say about our business now and the media landscape that they choose to run it on the front page?
Mm-hmm. I think you're probably right. And what it says, I think, is that the media, the plural noun, are becoming more bifurcated. There are many different voices, and there is a... And so even the Times is playing in that field as well.
I think it may be partly that, but I think more than that, it is a byproduct of the fact that the newspaper industry and newspapers have to have content and more prominently and different than the straight news reporting that the New York Times is noted for.
Yeah, I like your answer better than mine. Yeah, that's good.
But of course, you get the Aiken affair. Go back to that for a second. Now you find the Cal Thomases and that disgraceful view that you articulated already that you run in your paper.
As well as hundreds of others
in
the war on the world.
I can't help it what everybody else does.
Yes.
I know that you do it.
Yes, and I've met Cal Thomas. He actually is very pleasant.
And you're to be condemned for that.
Yes.
nevertheless, you know, it is so interesting that we columnists, whether we're minor or not, one of the reactionary guys in town here just referred to me as a minor columnist.
Minor
columnist. True.
You haven't been a minor for 50 years.
Well, more than 50, yeah. Okay, but when you're a columnist, you always have to get another angle that nobody else has. Mm. Everybody wants to write about Aiken, but now everything has been said. So in a definition of, is there such a thing? It's incredible anybody tries this of legitimate rape, and what did he mean by legitimate, and all the rest of it. But the big problem for columnists and for editorialists is to try to figure out something to say that hasn't been said. And sometimes that prompts them to say things which are ridiculous.
There's a good point there, because you're struggling. You sit there with a blank computer screen and you think, wow, what can I bring new to this thing? And I had an editor who once walked by my typewriters. I just had a sheet of white paper in there and nothing going on. And typewriters, these are things, I guess.
They used to have those. They were machines. Yeah.
Anyway, and he said, praise God from whom all first words flow. And they didn't. First words did not flow. I guess you guys wouldn't know the origin of that terminology.
No, because we're Jewish.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a replay. It's a takeoff on the doxology. Never mind.
If you're just
joining us, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here with you. If you want to join our conversation, our email is media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org. And we're now going to talk about getting naked and diving into the water.
Okay, but could we talk
about one thing very quickly? Yes.
That this morning I was reading your newspaper. The Times Union, a wonderful newspaper, I find to be excellent in every way, except for the editorial today.
Ah.
The city of Schenectady, the birthplace of television and all the rest, the city of Schenectady is trying to pass a rule: you can't smoke in the park.
Right.
And your guys and your editor, and you sit on that editorial committee, so don't run away from it, said, no, that's ridiculous. This is the nanny state, you know, all the rest of it. So I'm concerned about that because I think it's irresponsible. I don't want my little grandson, if I had one, to breathe, or daughter, to breathe the air in the park.
None of us want that.
What do you mean none of you do? You wrote that editorial.
Well, I think we all want people not to smoke in the park, but I think the difficulty is what's the value to a nearly bankrupt city to defend lawsuits on an issue as minor as this when, in fact, there are a lot of other ways. I think our point was that the city of Schenectady could have a bigger impact on smoking by passing a resolution insisting that the state of New York apply its anti-smoking funds to anti-smoking efforts. That is, the money from the tobacco settlement is now being diverted into the general fund. Should not be. It should be used for anti-smoking. Health funds ought to go into anti-smoking efforts around the state, because those really are paying off. Those billboards that show you know, how awful people look after smoking, and the
I see your point.
Ashtrays. Yeah.
Good sophistry.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good sophistry there, Rex. But no pass. I'm telling you now, that would be a deep blue book from where I come from, because there's always something else they could do. But this is very simple. Either there should be smoking in the park, infecting the kids, or there shouldn't. And I say there shouldn't, and you guys said they should, and forget about all the other stuff they could have been doing.
And what does this have to do with the media other than it was an editorial?
It's in his editorial page.
I see.
He didn't like it.
Start picking on
your
editorials.
Welcome to my world. Yeah. You know, Ira and I get these, you do too. We all get these phone calls.
Oh, I never get them.
No, of course not.
The problem is you answer them all.
I do answer.
You really get into trouble.
But I've been going into the new thing. The new format is thank you for sharing your opinion.
Yes,
right.
That's
you're
you
a worthless
go.
Dirty rat.
Right. Dear Dr. Shartok, dear sir, you rat, right? So anyway, what about this congressman who, Representative Yoder, who dove into the Sea of Galilee without anything on? Is this a story? We have a listener from Esopus.
Esopus, where everybody rides in a creek.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, Esopus, Ulster County.
Esopus Creek.
Esopus. Yeah. I've always said that wrong.
Yes, you have.
It's probably Latin origin.
Anyway, let's get to it.
Why did NPR devote several minutes, Paul writes, to the story when there was surely more substantial news to report? Did the representative disturb the neighbors? Were they trespassing? As Israel complained to me, on the one hand, he says, why did NPR devote so much time to it? On the other hand, he says, the reporting was incomplete. It's like the Woody Allen line, you know, the food at camp was terrible, and there was so little of it. Anyway, I expect this kind of fuss, he says, from the New York Post, not from a serious news outlet such as NPR. And besides, why make such a fuss over the one sensible member of the group who removed his clothes in order to go swimming when the real story is all those idiots who were swimming fully clothed? What were their names? Huh. So is there too much attention to something as, say, inconsequential as a member of Congress skinny dipping on a junket?
So it's intuitive, right, with you guys. You can smell a good story when you see one. And this is a good story. I mean, you know, would I rather that people understood Medicaid and Medicare and all the rest of it and knew who their assemblyman was and their state senator was? I would. But I know if I'm trying to hawk them papers that you guys and NPR are going to say, as you have said so many times, Rex, golly gee whiz, Martha, look at that.
Well, you know what? It was, first of all, it was a one-day story, and it probably that was enough.
Extended by us.
Well, no, we were commenting on this comedy, but there, you know why partly it was a one-day story? Because of Aiken, because that story broke on the same day.
Ah.
But I think this story, as Alan said, it was a good story, and I don't think that the press overdid it. It was discussed on Morning Joe and those places. It was in the papers the next day, and then it's gone away pretty much.
I like the fact that some news outlets used the opportunity to expand beyond the incident and to write about these privately funded junkets.
The junkets, you know, which is the bigger story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the fact that this particular junket came where all these guys were celebrating and whoop-de-dooing came right after the budget fight, and it just the juxtaposition of the budget fight and this seemingly party atmosphere struck people as disrespectful.
Well, the other thing part about this is I got a letter very angry at me the other day saying that clearly I'm not a Christian and that I am an atheist and that, you know, my views on Aiken and the rest of them are disgraceful. But also remember that this is a very holy place, the Sea of Galilee. And so the reason that it becomes good is that some people will feel it was violative of that whole connection to Jesus.
Right. To your point, by the way, Alan, when you said there's always another serious story, another listener in Albany, Donald writes about a story that he found in the New York Times, which he says describes a really frightening situation, and he's concerned that the rest of us haven't paid enough attention to it. That is a story about cyber destruction. As the Times wrote in a piece in their weekly Outlook section, deterring a giant computer attack makes nuclear deterrence sound easy. This was a very interesting piece by David Sanger, the chief Washington correspondent of the Times, talking about cyber attacks. And he says, why haven't we heard more about this in the other media?
Well, we have heard. It was 60 Minutes did a piece on it. It's all over. Where did this guy hear from it? It didn't come over ham radio. People are covering it.
I like that. It didn't come over ham radio.
And go back to that last story for a second. Is that yet another example? And I don't know the fellow from Esopus or what his politics are, but he found a problem with the coverage of the story and was blaming it on the media, the guy who, the naked swimmer.
He thinks we shouldn't have paid that much attention to it.
Yeah, and thus, you know, he's turned it around, basically saying, oh, the media made too big a deal out of this.
Right.
As opposed to, what was this idiot doing swimming naked in the Sea of Galilee? And that's the kind of discourse that we're having now. We're faced with something, and the instinct is, on the part of partisans, not to chastise the person involved, but to chastise the messenger, as you said earlier.
Yeah, very interesting. Well,
maybe,
you know,
not.
Anyway, as I was saying, if you want to be a part of the conversation, like Paul from Esopus and Donald from Center Square in Albany, which is the word I was struggling for there, don't forget media@wamc.org. The publisher, the professor, the editor, we're always happy to be here together. And
Some weeks more than others.
Yeah, not every week.
And Rosemary may be back next week, we think.
Great,
that would be exciting. She's got a European tale to tell.
We will hope. Don't fail to be here on the Media Project.
Yeah.
They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Oh, newspapermen.
papermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.